Hey there. Thank you for joining us for this episode of 13. Before we get started, as always, we want to thank our new patrons. Amy Jameson, Mary, Donnie, Kay Lem, and Britt Vollenwaber. Thank you so much for your support, and welcome to the Pod Fam. If you want to hear your name in audio, then you should check us out over on Patreon. You'll also find ad-free episodes, exclusive merch, and monthly bonus stories. Check it out at patreon.com/13pod or click the link in the show notes. Today's story is What Meets in the Dark and Rain, written by Darren Todd, narrated by Nate DeFort. Are you ready? Sit back, turn down the lights, and now, on with the show.
The storm began after my parents left for the evening. This was a trial, they told me, to see if I could handle myself alone. If anything went wrong, it'd be right back to the babysitters. I turned 12 a few weeks earlier, after starting sixth grade at my new school. Too old for babysitters. The house still felt strange. The living room alone could have held our old place in the city. Our tiny couch and chair sat in the middle of the huge room like kid-sized versions of regular furniture. I never minded the sitter at our old place. If I stayed out of trouble, she'd let me watch TV or play video games. I could tell her I had no homework, and she'd believe me. But my sitter for the last few weeks never let me do anything. She took control of the TV and Mom's laptop. She made me do all my homework, even checked it and piled on more if I finished early. She'd have people over and make me promise to keep it secret. But that night would begin my freedom. I was fine with my folks going out all the time if that meant I could stay home and do my own thing. From what I could tell at my new school, no kids my age had sitters anymore. They'd been driving tractors and working the fields and staying at home by themselves for years. I never told any of them about my sitter, but none of that mattered anymore. All I had to do was not mess up. Then, the storm came. What started as a drizzle grew louder and stronger until gusts of wind threw droplets against the windows in the living room so hard I barely heard the television. But with a house that size, I could find someplace quiet, away from the storm. I considered my bedroom. My mom had found me a TV VCR on Craigslist, and we'd bought a bunch of tapes at a local yard sale for a quarter apiece. Movies I hadn't seen in years. I craned my neck to look up the stairs at the glow pouring from my room. I could just make out the sound of the TV, which I must have left playing. Unfortunately, my bed set against a huge window. The storm would be just as loud up there, so I stayed downstairs. My back faced the living room windows. I kept turning to watch the sheets of rain ripple and the sky going dark. I couldn't focus on the TV show. While I stared out the window, the first bolt of lightning flashed. It shone so bright, I shielded my eyes since they'd adjusted to the dim. Only a moment later, a crack of thunder ripped through the air and the power went out. the sound from the TV gone, the storm seemed to double in volume. Light filled the living room with each bolt. Who knows how far the outage spread? We lived a long way from our neighbors. I could see one or two other houses during the day, but couldn't make out much of anything through the window now. I finally spotted the big house up the road when another bolt struck. Their lights seemed to flicker, but they stayed on. Somewhere upstairs, in the few boxes still left unpacked, sat my flashlight, a nice metal one I'd gotten the Christmas before. Or maybe we'd lost it during the move, like a bunch of my stuff. Candles would have to do. I felt my way into the kitchen, waiting for strobes of lightning to guide me. Shadows danced around like ghosts darting between hiding places. Before my imagination took hold, I started talking to myself. "Should be matches in the junk drawer," I announced. Mom used some candles only for decoration, so I'd have to make sure not to light any of those. Dad used to pick up matches from wherever they went in the evenings, back when restaurants still had smoking sections, so I found plenty of books full. He never did anything with them, just transferred them from one junk drawer to another, so I figured he wouldn't mind. I gathered a few candles, the kind set inside a glass jar, and lined them up on the dining room table. I struck a match and leaned over each one until I found one with an already blackened wick and set the match to it. When I held the candle up, it only lit a small area around me. Even if I lit more, with no electricity, what could I do? Time seemed to slow, like I had days to kill instead of hours. I considered going to bed, but I wasn't tired. The thunder would have kept me awake anyway. On a shelf in my room sat about a dozen unread books. I read a lot before, but since the move, it made me feel isolated. Now I mostly played online games with friends from my old neighborhood. But without power, reading seemed my only option. Solve a puzzle, maybe? Homework? But when I thought about it, the walk upstairs and down the hall to my room seemed farther in the darkness, even with the candle for light. Maybe I should just make dinner. I'd have to eat something cold with no way to nuke one of the frozen meals my parents kept stocked for me. Cereal, maybe? I ended up grabbing chips and munching on them while flipping through a gaming magazine. The storm kept up, but something about having the only light around made me feel safe, like I was tricking the storm. It had knocked out the power, but I was still winning, safe inside my bubble of light. The thought made me smile. A sudden bang of thunder hid another noise behind it, something closer. I tilted my head and listened, the magazine and chips forgotten. The sound came again, more apparent now without thunder to mask it. Someone was knocking on the front door. My bubble of light seemed to pop. Now holding a candle when all the windows shone black made me imagine things staring in at me that I couldn't see. I shook off the fear and got up, walking toward the door. I meant to yell something over the pelting rain, "Hold on," or "Just a minute." But when I opened my mouth, nothing came out. The lightning flashed again, and silhouetted a figure staring in through the glass. My heart jumped. Now, he must have seen me by the candlelight. So much for ignoring it. But back in the city, my parents said never to answer the door. Don't even look out the peephole without them around. A moment later, the knock came again, the banging almost as loud as the thunder, but along with another sound. Not quite yelling, more rhythmic somehow. Our house was only new to us. It was an older home, and all the doors still used a skeleton key, though my dad had installed deadbolts on most of them. I crept behind the door and dropped to my knees. I peered through the keyhole to see my uninvited guest. The darkness clouded everything, but when the lightning flared again, a distinctly animal face hovered inches from the keyhole. I recoiled at the sight, falling backward and taking the candle with me. Melted wax spilled on the floor, and the candle went out. It hadn't burned me, but I still screamed out of shock.
Hello? Is anyone there?
It sounded small and female. A moment later, the noise I'd heard earlier, the unmistakable bleat of a sheep. I righted the candle, stood, and twisted the deadbolt, my fear replaced by curiosity. I opened the door, and on the stoop, there was a girl my age with a lamb cradled in her arms. Even in the darkness, I saw both were drenched. She bobbed up and down, either from the chill or to comfort the lamb.
Oh, thank you. Please, can we come in?
I stepped to the side and then closed the door on the storm. The girl looked at me and sighed. Hold on. I'd put the matches in my pocket, so I struck another and relit the overturned candle. The low light showed the numerous drops and small pool of wax congealing on the wood. My panic only grew when I noticed the dark patch forming beneath the girl's feet. The water dimmed the wood, soaking in.
Wait, let me get you towels first.
I hurried to the downstairs hall closet, found the most threadbare towels, the ones Mom used for cleaning, and brought them back.
Thanks. That's so nice of you. God, I'm so cold. So is Belle.
She wrapped the lamb first, and then managed to drape a towel around her shoulders with one hand. I meant to help, but only held the candle up for light.
Do you need a blanket or anything? The power's out, or I turn on the heat.
Could you start a fire?
She had long, straight hair, light brown or even red. It framed her lean and beautiful face. Freckles stood out on her cheeks, like she spent a lot of time in the sun. Back then, I'd become aware that some of the girls my age were starting to wear makeup. But she either didn't or the storm had washed it away.
I don't really know how to use the fireplace.
I turned around and shone the light on the stone hearth. My dad made several fires in it since the warm weather had fled. I'd seen him do it, but I'd also seen my mom fix lasagna, and I'd be no help in that regard.
Well, here, if I can just...
She held out the lamb. I realized she meant for me to take Belle. I put the candle on the floor and held open my arms as far away from my body as possible. She slid the lamb into my arms and pushed it up against my chest.
Yeah, that's perfect. Here, just hold her like a baby.
I don't have any babies. I mean, I don't have brothers or sisters. Her hands moved over my bare arms, and they felt cold as stone. Still, they sent heat through me. Her long fingers moved with a confidence mine only managed when holding a video game controller.
You'll do fine.
Her teeth chattered as if the lamb had been keeping her warm. She wore a long-sleeve cotton shirt so wet it clung to her. Even the denim vest she wore over it looked black in the light, also soaked. Same with her blue jeans. Her feet squished inside cowboy boots as she danced from foot to foot. Do you want some dry clothes? My mom has clothes. She smiled.
You're really nice. The fire will be better, though. Just give me a minute.
And she meant it. In a single minute, she'd set the kindling and stacked up the logs. She caught the kindling with a single match and added to it over several minutes until the sticks ignited. She placed a single log on top and moved the others closer, like little soldiers waiting to carry out orders.
Can you bring her over here, please?
She took the towel from her back and doubled it over on the stone floor in front of the fire. After freeing Belle from the folds of her damp towel, she did the same with it. The lamb seemed pleased. It bleated twice, folding its legs under itself. And setting down, it shut its eyes.
I wish I could dry your clothes, but the power's out.
I felt like an idiot saying this, but she smiled up at me like she knew I meant well.
It's okay. Let me warm up and then we can check the breakers.
The breakers?
She squinted and smiled like she thought I was teasing her. In the firelight, she looked so cute doing this. I didn't say so, but the image snagged and set itself in my memory.
The circuit breakers? In the basement?
Right, I said, still not positive what she meant.
So we can get the power back on?
Gotcha.
The light from the fire grew as one log caught, then another two.
So, what were you guys doing out in the storm? I asked.
I heard our mama sheep, Henrietta, calling out from the shelter, like she'd lost one of her lambs. I can tell when she's worried. It just sounds different.
So you, like, went looking for Belle in this?
I pointed out the bay window.
I would have saddled our horse, but I knew Daddy would say no, so I just took off on foot.
I had a hard enough time finding candles, I said.
She laughed, a melodic, genuine sound that made me smile. We talked for a while, and the house that had, minutes before, felt awkward and even scary, now felt comforting. I walked back toward the door where the flickering orange glow reflected off the now solid wax.
Oh no, I said, and lowered the candle to look closer.
Sure enough, the drops were more flat than rounded. Not like I could just pop them up with a fingernail and leave no trace behind. We'd had different wood flooring in the city. It was smooth as glass and felt more like plastic than wood. Dad liked these floors better, but I didn't know why. Right then, I wished for the slick floors of our old home, where I could have scraped up the wax with a butter knife in 2 seconds.
Everything okay?
There's wax all over the floor. My parents are gonna kill me. Well, not so much kill me as make sure I have babysitters until I'm 18, which is worse.
She walked over and leaned down to inspect the wax. Her hair had gone wavy, which at least meant it was drying. She had taken off her boots and socks, barefoot now, her jeans rolled up.
Well, let's go ahead and check the basement. Now we've got two reasons.
Two? I asked.
Well, the heat, for one, but we need to iron out that wax.
She held up a hand like she expected me to protest.
I know it sounds crazy, but it works. Trust me. You just put newspaper down and iron over it. It pulls the wax out of anything. I've seen it.
I don't know if we have any newspaper. She wrinkled her face.
What? Your folks don't read the news?
I nodded, suddenly worried she'd think my parents were dumb or something. They do it online. She kept her forehead crinkled. On their tablets, you know? She looked behind her, toward the basement.
Sure. Rags work too. You ready?
I'd seen our new basement only once, when we toured the house before closing. Even then, we'd only glanced into the dark depths. Down a slanted set of narrow wooden stairs where a single bulb lit up the stone walls and cobwebs. Something about going with her made it easier. I just hoped she turned out as cool as she seemed. Even in my own house, other kids might play tricks once they figured out. The basement scared me. She seemed cooler than that. After knowing her less than an hour, I felt like I could trust her. She probably had a great sense of humor, but had way better things to do than play pranks or tease someone. I led the way to the basement entrance, pulled open the door, and lowered the candle. Its circle of light revealed those death trap steps.
You want me to go first?
I held the candle between us, showing a kind face, not at all mocking me. I wanted to lead the way down since this was my house, but what came out was, if you want to. She took the candle and eased down the steps, crouched low so the light fell over the next step. Even being cautious, she soon left me behind, and I rushed to catch up. With no rail to hold, she moved her free hand along the dusty shelves and then the stone walls. The best I managed without getting a serious case of the willies was to put a hand on her back. She didn't seem to mind, so I kept it there against the still damp fabric of her vest.
Okay, where's the breaker box?
I'm not sure. In the regular place, I guess. She turned around and smiled.
Isn't it cool down here?
I said yes right away, and once the uneasiness passed, I guess it was. I would never have gone down there alone, even on a dare. But with her, it felt like an adventure. Right then, I imagined I could go anywhere, do anything, if it meant being with her. The breaker box came into view along the leftmost wall. The candlelight reflected off the thin pool of water on the basement floor.
Where's your dehumidifier? You have to run a dehumidifier in here all the time, even when it's not raining, or you'll get mold and stuff. Especially now, or these floors will stay wet for weeks.
I think Dad was getting one. I lied. I cataloged what she said and planned on mentioning it to Dad the following day. She brushed spider webs from a breaker box and tugged the metal door open. I'd seen too many movies to trust the box myself. To me, it was eager to shock anyone who touched the wrong wire or something the good guy might kick the villain into, electrocuting him. Inside, black and brown levers turned sideways were flipped to either the left or right. She held the light to the inside panel, where someone with sloppy handwriting had marked several numbered labels.
Okay, we just have to find the main.
She scanned the labels, saying each name as her fingertip danced over them.
Kitchen, upstairs bath, master bedroom.
You can read that?
Main. Here it is.
She looked back at the switches and found the corresponding number. She turned to me.
Cross your fingers.
She pushed it to the left with a sharp whacking sound. And at first, I thought nothing had happened. Then I looked up the stairs and saw the glow from the living room light.
It worked, I said. Nice job.
I felt a strange urge to stay in the basement. Like the wonder of her visit would disappear in the electric lights. Down there, we still had unexplored darkness. So long as she stayed with me, I would have mapped every inch, spiders, leaks, and all. I was blocking the stairs and she stood there waiting. When she raised her eyebrows, I snapped out of it.
Sorry,
I said, and turned to head up. The light from above cast enough glow across the stairs to see them in all their splintered glory. They were so steep, I used my hands to brace myself, like a toddler just learning to climb. As brazen as she had been, the idea of putting my bare hands on the shelf sent shivers through me. I pictured them breaking off in my hands, or a family of spiders waiting for that moment to crawl on me all at once. A few steps higher and I stumbled, miscalculating the depth of the board. My foot slipped down to the plank below, scraping my shin and sending me careening forward. I would have plowed face first into the steps, but a strong hand caught my arm.
Whoa! Oh, I gotcha. You're okay.
I turned toward her.
You're still cold.
She let go and pulled her hand to her side.
Oh, I'm all right. It'll warm up fast now.
She smiled, but it looked different than before. We turned into the kitchen and I hit the switch. In the flood of light, I saw her much better. She still looked like she was freezing. Her lips even had a bluish color. I cranked up the heat on the thermostat.
Do you want hot chocolate?
I asked. She grinned and it seemed like she was about to say yes, but she went quiet and gazed down for a few seconds.
No, thank you. I think I'm fine.
She looked up.
What's that sound?
I listened. The house seemed noisy compared to a minute ago. The heat was whirring, the fridge, the ceiling fans. The storm kept going, but muffled now. Between rumbles of thunder, the fire crackled in the living room. But then came the distinct sound of my television upstairs.
Oh, that's my TV. I'll go turn it off.
Can I see your room?
My mind wandered upstairs, to the laundry on the floor and the soda cans on top of my dresser. Maybe I could race up there first and clean before she saw it.
Sure, I said. Let's go.
I led the way, feeling silly for thinking the house seemed ominous before. Now bathed in light, it was harmless, especially compared with the storm outside. I only hoped it would keep up, so she had to stay. I didn't even care when my parents were coming home. She needed me, and I needed her. I felt more connected to her than with anyone at school in the weeks I'd been there. I raced ahead and threw my clothes into a pile, chucked soda cans into the trash, and swept an armful of comics into a stack on my computer desk. The television played Jungle Book, which seemed childish now, though I'd always liked that story. I toggled the power button on the side to quiet it. I was kicking the clothes into my closet when she came in. She looked around, but not like I'd hoped. Not seeing the cool posters or movie props along the shelves. Not scanning my books or even admiring my new computer. Instead, her eyes moved from place to place with something like suspicion.
I know this.
What do you mean?
What's going on here?
She grew angry all of a sudden. Her hands balled into fists at her sides, and she leaned in as if ready to pounce on me. I would never hit a girl, but right then I was pretty sure she could beat me up whether I hit back or not.
I don't understand, I said. What's wrong?
I moved the rest of the laundry into the closet with a foot and closed the door. I kept my hand on the door jamb, like I might need to launch myself across the room if she came at me. But then, she went slack, hands and mouth opening. She stared past me at the closet, her face confused. I looked down at my hand along the frame. I'd seen the tick marks before. Dad said he'd paint over them, but I'd asked him not to. Something about the marks I liked. Melissa, 2, 1995. Melissa, 4, 1997. Now that I looked again, something clicked. That script, the weird L's and almost cursive E's. I'd studied it for several minutes the first time I'd seen it to figure out the name. It was the same writing as inside the breaker box. Melissa, I said aloud.
What?
You're Melissa. Saying the name out loud caused my stomach to sink and my head to feel light. She stared at me.
How did you know that? I never told you my name.
This was your room. My breath quickened. Still, while I expected fear, I felt only bewilderment. She looked around again, her face going through several emotions, one after another.
I don't understand. This isn't my house. It can't be. If it is, then what are you doing here?
I looked back down at the tick marks and followed them all the way to Melissa, 12, 2005.
You haven't lived here in a long time, I said.
Despite a dizzying stupor, despite not knowing if she would hit me, I walked over and took her hands. I'd expected as much, but still, the cold surprised me. It no longer fit. The house was warm, even stuffy, with the fire burning and heat on full blast.
That was your dad's handwriting in the breaker box, and here on the doorframe.
What's happening?
Her face broke and tears formed. I thought about all she'd done since stepping inside. Thought about what sort of 12-year-old was brave enough to wander through a storm just to get a lamb to safety. I swallowed my own apprehension and said,
"You're all right,"
and hugged her. Her whole body felt cold and damp, but she settled into my embrace, and we stood there for what seemed like minutes.
"I'm scared."
"No, you're not," I said. "You're brave. Braver than anyone I've ever known."
I thought about that date. More than 10 years since her mom or dad had made that last tick mark. I didn't know much about the previous owners, but Dad had said they were older. If they had kids, they were long gone. Maybe the house had gone through a few people since Melissa lived there. Had she come before now, looking for shelter? Maybe this was her first visit. Either the only time someone answered her or the first time she'd found it. 10 years she'd been wandering, looking for her home in the storm.
I don't know what to do.
Just stay, I said into her ear. Her hair smelled like earth and rain.
I have to go home.
You're already home, Melissa. She pulled away from me.
Do you hear that?
I shook my head. Hear what? She turned to listen.
Henrietta's calling out. She must have lost Belle in the storm. I have to go find her.
She broke away and tore down the stairs. I followed her.
Wait,
I called.
She's here. You saved her already.
Over the stairwell, I looked down into the living room. The fire burned on, but nothing but damp towels lay in front of it. Melissa ran for the door.
I'll be okay. I'm just going to go find her and I'll bring her back. Don't worry about me.
Stop, please. You don't come back,
I said. I all but fell down the last several steps and put my hands on the door.
If you leave, you won't come back.
I shook all over, my knees trying to give out. She seemed to consider this, her breath heaving in and out, cold on my face.
You've been very kind, but I have to go home.
She leaned in and kissed me, the chill of her lips sending a jolt through my body. Then she pushed firmly on my chest, opened the door to the raging storm, and fled out into the night. When I recovered my senses, I flipped on the porch light and threw open the door. I saw nothing but the pelting rain and the impenetrable darkness beyond the glow. I searched the living room. Her boots had vanished along with the lamb. I stepped into the storm and called for her, yelling over the thunder, the cold drops soaking into my clothes. I listened for her, for the lamb, for anything. Nothing came. It's been almost a year since she knocked on my door. After she left, I cleaned everything and used her trick for getting rid of the wax. I even blow-dried the damp spots in the wood and got rid of any evidence of the fire. I couldn't have my parents pushing a sitter on me now. She wouldn't come back if a sitter were here, storm or not. Ever since, I checked the weather reports and insisted my parents go out and enjoy themselves whenever the forecast called for a storm. I prayed for a power outage, even tried flipping the breaker myself when the lightning failed me. Still, no Melissa. Tonight will be different. It has to be. I turn 13 tomorrow, and somehow I know that'll change things. The tumblers won't line up just right anymore after tonight. My bedroom light is on. The television is playing Jungle Book, and I'm watching the downstairs TV. I've hidden every new piece of furniture. The dehumidifier is unplugged, and I'm wearing the same clothes, even if they don't fit as well anymore. My room is lined with dirty laundry and Coke cans, though I've grown sick of soda. The same towels I'd given her wait washed and ready in the downstairs closet. I check my watch. My feet tap out to nervous rhythm on the hardwood floor. The storm is really going. With every flash, I wait for the thunder, willing the power to go out. One bolt fills the whole house with its luminescence, and I close my eyes. The thunder follows, not a second behind. The house goes quiet. I open my eyes to darkness, and my heart quickens.
Please,
I whisper.
Please.
Please.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of 13. If you like what you heard, stop what you're doing and leave a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. This has been What Meets in the Dark and Rain, written by Darren Todd, narrated by Nate DeFort. Melissa was Brooke Jeanette. Music composed by Caleb Ritchie. Editing and sound design by Brooke Jeanette. Additional assistance from Ian Epperson and Bridget Freeman. Our producer-level patrons are Tattooed Fox, Rhiannon, Sean Geary, Anthony Diaz, Amy Harper, Jackie Kay, Chantel Payne, Jake R., Emily Toll, and Cozamine. Thank you guys so much for your support. Click the link in the show notes to learn more about joining us on Patreon. And check us out on social media. You can find us most places under Pod 13. And you can join the Facebook group for 13 Podcast. Just look for the logo, and you'll find links in the show notes. If you'd like to submit a story to be performed on the show, or if you'd like to contact us about anything else, you can get in touch at info@13podcast.com. You'll find submission guidelines and other info on our website, 13podcast.com. You can find that in the show notes too. Bridget Freeman is yelling through the storm. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.
Hey, Drew and Jonathan Scott here. Build a customized renter's policy with American Family Insurance so you can protect your tandem bike on the go.
Thief!
Oh, he is struggling with that two-seater. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at amfam.com.
Some exclusions may apply. Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies. 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.